Hi everyone, and thanks for listening to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea, and today I'm joined by Janka Krinks-Kleep and Jörg Schreiner. We will talk about their book, The Antifragile Organization, From Hierarchies to Ecosystems. Janka and Jörg are leading strategy experts, speakers, and lecturers on digital transformation, agile management, innovation, and business ecosystems. Drawing on their extensive hands-on experience, they challenge traditional implementations and demonstrate how embracing volatility can enable organizations to survive in an era of relentless change. In The Antifragile Organization, the authors introduce the groundbreaking concept of antifragility in organizations, turning the unpredictability of markets into a catalyst for growth. Drawing from decades of hands-on experience, the book brilliantly unboxes the mechanics of organizations that do not just survive disruption, but improve because of it. Welcome, Jörg and Janka, to the Lit Radio podcast. It's a great pleasure to have you with us today and to speak about your book, The Antifragile Organization. How are you today?
Hi, Thea. I'm fine. Oh, we are fine. Thank you. It's a busy time now for us.
Hi, Thea. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It's a great pleasure. All right. So my first question to you is, why did you decide to write your book?
Well, great question. We just kept running into the same paradox again and again. Companies were, you know, still trying to design for stability, for predictability in a world that really had gone wild. So traditional org charts, annual cycles, performance reviews, they all kind of assumed that tomorrow would look like yesterday. And that's when the classic Peter Drucker line kept echoing in our heads. Trying to predict the future is like trying to drive down a country road at night with no lights while looking out of the back window. So it's because the world just kept spinning faster. Predictable outcomes, they evaporate faster than, faster than our morning coffee. So we asked the question that really kicked it all off. What if volatility isn't the exception anymore? What if it is the new baseline? Once you accept that, the job isn't to control uncertainty, it's to benefit from it. So we realized that insights around this topic were already there, but scattered, incomplete, and disconnected. You would find pieces of the puzzle in strategy journals, in agile manifestos, in operations handbooks or complexity blocks, but they were all living in different galaxies. And that fragmentation wasn't just inconvenient. It was actually getting in the way and stopping that kind of collaboration that we really need to tackle today's uncertainty. And then we thought, what if we could build a bridge, a shared language, something that connects a product manager in Hamburg to an HR lead in Hanoi, so they could start Monday morning speaking the same antifragile language.
Right. And also in our MBA classes, we saw it over and over again. Strategy folks said one thing, HR folks said another. The tech people, they brought something completely different. They were all working with different maps. It was like academic ping pong, great energy, but no shared mental model. And even if they got the idea of agility or resilience or whatever the buzzword of the moment was, they were still trapped in the mindset that less volatility equals better. We wanted to offer a single field guide, not another buzzword, but something that stitched those disciplines together. A guide that says, here's how you turn constant change into an advantage. Using tools from every discipline, but connecting them through the lens of uncertainty as opportunity.
Absolutely. And well, you've written a great book on the topic. But before we speak more about that and the content of the book, let me ask you, what was the writing process like for you? Because this is a book.
Oh, it was really intense. 2 years of writing, half a year of editing, and the rest was kind of a blur. The Google Doc we used, it was chaos, but in a good way. Think a whitewater raft, not waterfall. We would toss in research from all over: complexity theory, organizational design, behavioral science, also network economics, agile management, even elements from systems thinking, basically anything that could help us make sense of uncertainty. Plus our own experience as organizational coaches, plus content that was formerly only available through our academic lectures and executive trainings. Then we would wrestle it into something you could actually read. That's really the hardest part. But we had a golden rule: if your own couldn't follow the paragraph or a sentence, then rewrite it. Every few chapters, we then had to stop and go, wait, this is actually where the book starts. And then we would shuffle the whole thing.
Was like, oops.
Yeah, and again, and again, and by version six, we had killed so many jargon, it could fill the bingo cards of more than one consultant team. And we knew we were done, Janka, I think, when two things happened. First, we could read it out loud without cringing because of all the consulting jargon. It was gone. And second, if we tried deleting something and it made the flow worse, we knew this piece had earned its place.
Exactly. Every sentence had to do something. So either clarify a tricky concept or spark a smile, and ideally both. We kept asking, can a midnight flying manager absorb this before landing? And that was kind of our bar for clarity. And when we finally handed it over to our editors, we were lucky because they shared our allergy to consultant speak. So no paradigm alignment or strategic synergies that survived the cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what you're saying. It's very interesting because, after all, the most important thing when writing a book is that your audience actually understands what you are saying. So I think what you did was very, very good. All right, and now let's dip into the content of the book. And my first question regarding that is, how do you define an anti-fragile organization and what are its capabilities?
Oh, how would I define anti-fragile organization? Good question again. Okay, picture this: a sailing ship, but instead of just surviving a storm, it actually gains speed from the gusts. That is what anti-fragility looks like in an organization. Most firms, they try to weather the storm, but anti-fragile ones harvest it, and they do it because of how they work, the way they learn, the way they build. And first off, they are constantly learning. Every launch, every complaint, every hiccup feeds straight into decision making. They live on perpetual learning loops. It's a system where every product launch, every customer complaint, or supply chain hiccup becomes an input for better decisions. And this means lessons move faster than the next disruption. And second, they also don't bet the farm. Instead of one big plan, they run lots of small experiments. The important part is that the few that do succeed start to compound, and that's where the real upside comes from. It's basically venture capital logic, but applied inside the org chart. You place lots of small bets, and when one takes off, it really scales. And the last piece is flexibility everywhere. Teams, structures, even budgets, Everything is designed to reconfigure when needed. They are neither stuck nor locked into rigid 5-year Gantt charts or big plannings. And the point is, under pressure, the system adapts. It doesn't crack. It actually improves, like muscles rebuilding after a good workout.
Yeah, but all that reconfiguration doesn't mean it's chaos. Yes. Anti-fragility isn't about letting everything run wild. There are guardrails, and there's purpose. There are clear metrics and interface rules, most of all. You still have constraints in such organizations, but they're designed to enable experiments without turning them into a resource war. And when something weird pops up, when a number goes red on the dashboard, the first reaction isn't panic or blame. It's curiosity instead. What can we learn from this? How can we respond and gain? Anti-fragile organizations don't treat variants as contamination. They treat it like oxygen. That mindset is what makes the difference.
Definitely. But could you explain what are the benefits of embracing anti-fragility in organizations?
Yes, that's this great German phrase we once heard from a frustrated chief operational officer. He said, "Je größer wir werden, desto träger werden wir." In English, that's the bigger we grow, the slower we move. And yeah, that's how most big companies feel. Growth becomes drag. And anti-fragile design now flips that entirely. In those systems, the more you scale, the more adaptive you get, because every new part, every node adds learning capacity. It's not just growth in size, it's growth in intelligence. And when a company really commits to anti-fragility, it essentially stops playing the defense. It starts compounding upside. They stop treating uncertainty like a tax. You start to treat it like venture capital. Every disruption, every market jolt becomes seed funding for something better. And the biggest immediate benefit is speed, to answer your question. Decisions are based on live feedback, not some frozen 5-year roadmap. So while your competitors are still drafting the risk assessments, you're already testing what works.
Exactly.
And then that speed also snowballs into diversification. If one part of your business stumbles, you're not stuck. You've already got more small bets gaining traction elsewhere. So a setback doesn't feel like a threat. It just feels like rebalancing your portfolio.
And there is a cultural piece here that we should not underestimate. People are drawn to environments where taking smart risks is rewarded and not punished. Let's call that the cultural dividend. So when people realize that experimentation is the safest behavior and not the riskiest, creativity stops hiding in hallway whispers. It shows up in value delivered to the customers, not just in the strategy deck. And it doesn't stop with the employees. Investors see it too. They notice that capital is flowing based on actual results, and not just based on PowerPoint. That makes the cost of funding the next wave of ideas go down significantly. And honestly, there's also a psychological shift that is kind of liberating. As a leader, you can let go of this exhausting illusion that you need to control everything. That illusion is a trap. Instead, you start leading with curiosity. You don't have to predict every twist of the market. You need just a system that gets stronger every time the market surprises you. And that is as close to a sustainable advantage as you are going to get, because today's world is basically allergic to standing still.
Yeah, and we've actually lived this story. 10 years ago, both of us were working inside Bosch as internal business coaches. And the CEO back then, he was already thinking ahead. He knew that digital transformation wasn't just another tech upgrade. He knew it was going to reshape the entire automotive industry. And so he asked a big, honest question. How can a company like Bosch at that scale with more than 100,000 employees still operate like a startup? And he didn't just mean act faster. He meant rethink the whole setup, structure, governance, decision logic. What would the ideal organizational setup look like for the future? And it was a serious challenge. We asked all the right questions for that time, 10 years ago.
Many of them, yes.
But at the time, we couldn't give the kind of answers that top leadership then was ready to act on. The tools weren't fully there yet, and the patterns of anti-fragility, they were also still forming. Now, looking back a decade later, I think those patterns have become a lot clearer. We've seen what actually works and how systems can be designed not just to survive disruption, but to grow stronger from it. But meanwhile, companies like Bosch, with all the brilliance, still ended up making their strategic moves rooted in this stability mindset. And now they're under immense pressure and honestly not very well positioned to adapt.
Right. Absolutely right. And that is a real difference. Anti-fragile organizations almost never, really never end up backed into a corner. Not because they are lucky, not because they dodge disruption, but because they have built the capacity to move with it. So when turbulence hits, they don't lose their footing. They actually find their next step. And that's the real payoff, not just survival. It is upward mobility under pressure. When markets shift, you pivot, not months later, but while the shift is still happening. When regulations tighten, you're not scrambling. You have already prototyped the compliant alternative. Well, and when a competitor goes under, you're ready, not just to absorb their customers, but their talent too, without the whole system seizing up. In a world where volatility is the status quo, anti-fragility isn't a nice to have. It is the only way to stay in the game and keep moving forward.
Yes.
Yeah, I think what you just described really shows the real benefits of embracing anti-fragility, but also it really shows that leaders, they need to be open to move out of that stability mindset, which sometimes is very detrimental. But now let's look at the subtitle of your book, which is From Hierarchies to Ecosystems. So could you explain why this transition is so important? And then again, how companies can actually achieve it?
So hierarchies. Okay. They were perfect for their time. I mean, they really worked in an environment that was stable and fairly predictable. You had one clear chain of command, one right way of doing things, and the whole game was about scaling all this efficiently. But the world we are in now is not linear anymore. It is messy, fast, and it is constantly changing. You've got unexpected connections popping up everywhere. So markets don't behave like machines. They behave more like ecosystems. And in an ecosystem, value doesn't come from controlling every single branch. It comes from letting diversity thrive. It comes from creating conditions where things can interact and combine in new ways. So the real shift here is moving away from managing people and processes like you're running an assembly line to enabling them to behave more like a network. It is not about pushing everyone to support the tallest tree, or the biggest brand, or the most powerful department. Instead, you start noticing value in the undergrowth, in those small side projects, the cross-functional hacks, the weird root systems connecting things that no one thought were connected. That is where the next real breakthrough usually starts.
Exactly. And the problem is, with traditional organizations and hierarchies, they put all their bets on that one bold tree. It gets all the light, all the resources, everything else around it gets cut back. And sure,
yeah,
this big tree looks impressive for a while, but what you end up with is a sort of monoculture. Nothing else can grow. No new shoots, no backup systems, no resilience. There is no regeneration, no renewal. And eventually, the soil around just dries up. And when that bold tree gets hit, there's nothing left to fall back on. And then you're stuck with this massive, proud structure surrounded by desert and petrified. End of story. And ecosystem thinking completely flips that. You don't optimize for one winner. You cultivate interaction. You build pathways between parts of the organization that normally wouldn't talk to each other. You let different branches evolve in parallel and even compete for better solutions. And when managers stop trying to defend their turf and start enabling those connections, something shifts. The whole system starts to feel different. It gets more adaptive, more alive. And you realize, oh, right, the goal was never to grow one perfect tree. The goal was to grow a forest.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that sounds absolutely great. And I think from my perspective, probably one really good benefit of all of that is that both employees, they feel more empowered and more motivated to actually do their job, which is what every manager wants, really. But now we know what the meaning of anti-fragile organization is. We spoke what the benefits are and now why we need to build those ecosystems. But let's get a little bit more practical now. Let me ask you, how do those anti-fragile organizations work in terms of their processes, structures, and also leadership?
That's really a big part of the book. And I hope this doesn't get too long. First, start with processes. Think of processes in anti-fragile organizations not like fixed pipelines, but more like Lego sets. You build what fits the situation right now. And then when the context shifts, you just snap on a new block or pull one off. Nothing in this process landscape is poured in concrete. Say a team is responding to a new customer need. Maybe they're prototyping something brand new. And they can redesign the workflow on the fly, try a different approach, and even toss out something that no longer fits. And they don't have to ask for permission to do this. And that's the point. It keeps experiments cheap. It keeps reversals light. These people are not failing. They're just making mid-flight course corrections. And if you zoom out of this team to the big structure, decision-making always follows information. Let's say there is a supply chain hiccup in Sao Paulo, and the team on the ground doesn't have to escalate 5 layers up the chain. They already have the context. They have the tools and the trust to act. Headquarters, they are seeing the same data, sure, but they're not micromanaging. They're not telling them what to do. They're simply observing, learning, but staying out of the way. And that creates a loop, one of these learning loops. When teams deliver well, they earn more autonomy. And when something goes wrong, but it does so transparently, you can share it. What have you learned from it? That earns you trust. Try again. And that's how autonomy and accountability reinforce each other.
And that dynamic changes what we even mean by leadership. In anti-fragile organizations, leadership isn't about giving top-down orders. It is not a fixed role. It is a system-wide capability. So some days leading means unblocking a team, like getting rid of a legacy policy that slows everyone down. Other times, it is about connecting the dots, bringing together two people who didn't even know they were working on adjacent insights. Honestly, it is less like running a command center and more like playing in a really good jam session. The person with the clearest insight, the right read on the moment, they take the lead. And the rest of the team, they lean in. They pick up the groove. They build on it. Sure, titles still matter, but they don't dictate who gets to speak or decide. What matters is context, relevance. Who sees the pattern? Who moves first? Who makes the best call in that specific situation? And when you combine all of that, those modular processes, transparent structures, emergent leadership, something really powerful happens. The system doesn't just survive pressure. It gets better under pressure. Cracks turn into improvements. Friction becomes signal. A spike in demand doesn't break the oak. It sharpens it. That's anti-fragility. Stress isn't just something you cope with. It is something you learn from again and again until learning itself becomes your competitive edge.
Absolutely. And I think that's the ultimate goal, really. And as you said, York, I mean, I know this is a big question and you both gave a really beautiful answer. But of course, I would encourage our listeners to read the book because there are many more insights about all of that. But yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating stuff. But now let's talk a little bit about how can leaders actually assess their organizations, because before you actually build such an organization, you need to know where you stand at the moment. So how can leaders critically assess their organization on their ability to withstand and thrive in change, or in other words, how anti-fragile they are?
So if you really want to know how anti-fragile your organization is, don't start with KPIs and definitely not with any kind of glossy dashboards. Go to the edges, where the organization actually meets reality. That's your call centers, your field engineers, your product teams, those closest to the customers. And then listen closely. If they are spending more time navigating internal processes than responding to the market, that's not just inefficiency. It's a red flag. That's fragility. And for me, there are two signs I always look for. First, how fast does a signal become an action? So let's say a customer behavior shifts. How long does it take for that insight to turn into an actual response? Are we talking days, weeks, quarters, years? Because if your teams are still running on quarterly planning cycles, but your customers are changing weekly, then you are out of sync. You are not moving at the real speed of change. You are kind of tuned to the wrong clock speed. And the second thing is this, how fast does learning travel? If a team in one part of the world stumbles on something great, how long until another team halfway across the map even hears about it? In anti-fragile orgs, that learning spreads like wildfire. And in fragile one, it dies silently, buried in some PowerPoint that no one reads.
Yeah, but the real test, it's not how the organization behaves when everything's calm and comfortable. It's how it behaves under pressure. So stress the system a little, create small controlled disruptions, like remove a layer of approvals for a week, or give a cross-functional teams 48 hours to deliver a working prototype. Then watch what happens. If your system freezes up, escalates decisions, or starts producing 20-page memos titled Lessons Learned before anything even starts, that's not adaptation. That's compliance mode. But here's another lens. Follow the money. How much of your annual budget is already locked in at the beginning of the year? If it's over 90%, then yeah, you've built a cathedral. It's beautiful, sure, but when the ground shifts, it's really, really hard to renovate. Anti-fragile organizations, they keep financial flexibility. They fund options, not certainties. They're not just open to emergence. They budget for it.
And let's not forget the emotional side here. In anti-fragile culture, a surprise doesn't trigger a panic spiral. It sparks a conversation. You hear questions like, what just happened? Or what else could this lead to? So the room leans in, not back. And that is a cultural signal I look for, curiosity under pressure. And that is what sets these organizations apart. You don't measure anti-fragility by abstract values on a slide. You observe how the system learns, adapts, and metabolizes shocks. And the real signal you are looking for isn't hidden, and it is quite simple. Each time the system is tested, it adjusts a little faster, a little smarter. Mm-hmm. And that is when you know you're on the right track.
Definitely. But let's say that a leader, they do that assessment and realize, well, we're not doing very well. We need to adapt. We need to be more anti-fragile. How can they do that from scratch?
Oh, from scratch, it's the most important thing I would say is give your teams a guiding North Star, something that these teams and individuals can really rally around. You need a clear, strong purpose.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, but it's something that doesn't just sit on a wall in the lobby or live in a deck from the communications department. It has to resonate. You want people in your organization who actually care about that purpose because it connects them with their own aspirations. And that purpose then, if it's real, helps cut through the noise. It helps teams tie to their work to something bigger. So when they're making decisions, when they're pursuing opportunities, they're not waiting for some central strategy round to give permission, they just go. With a shared intent and with clarity, without needing everything mapped in advance.
Exactly. And once those teams are in motion, the next big step is wiring the whole organization for real-time feedback. Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean sending reports up the chain. No, I mean making insights flow sideways, across teams, across roles, quickly. Everyone should be able to see what is happening. How are customers reacting? What is breaking in the field? Which new idea is quietly working somewhere else? And that only works if you treat decisions as temporary by default. They are not set in stone. They are valid until disproven. And in an anti-fragile setup, that might mean until tomorrow morning.
Yes, and also another thing is hiring becomes really important at that point. You're not just looking for deep domain experts. You want people with range, people who can walk away from something that worked great yesterday if it stops making sense tomorrow. And too many organizations get stuck there because people are emotionally attached to past wins and they don't want to let go. But you need talent that's ready to adapt, not just defend.
Right. Structurally, you don't need big control towers at all. What you need is clarity. You need autonomy. And you need accountability. Because one without the other breaks the system every time. So in practice, that means replacing hierarchy with dynamic agreements and real trust in commitments made freely without force. And these agreements could look like, look, this is what we provide or what we expect. This is how you can work with us. And this is how we will know it is time to pivot. And those kind of agreements keep things loosely coupled, but still coordinated. And the digital tools come in here. Because now, with those digital tools, we have got ways to build real transparency into these agreements. Everyone can see the decision chain, the commitments, the rationale. You no longer need hierarchies or proximity to stay in sync. Everyone has access and can add to it with new contributions. That is how dynamic coordination actually scales. Without those modern tools, it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, but the tools are not sufficient yet. The most crucial piece of the puzzle is here the culture, the mindset. You've got to reward learning, not just winning. If a team ends up a failing experiment early and shares what they learned, that's not a footnote. That's front page news inside your organization. That's kind of transparency that you need. You want that fail smart mindset because it what keeps the system adaptive.
You're right. The point isn't to build a perfect system. The point is to build a system that learns faster than the world changes. You want a place that runs on small bets, fast signals, permeable boundaries. So a story, a narrative, where adapting isn't a course correction, but a sign of maturity. It is what grown-up systems do. If you can keep reinforcing those kinds of principles, anti-fragility just becomes what the organization does, not a strategy. A habit, the way the place works.
Yeah. Well, I think you gave some really great tips on how to start building that anti-fragile organization. Thanks for that. And just to finish this very interesting conversation, I have one final question to you which is, if you have to pick three main messages or three highlights from your book that every leader of today should hear, what would they be?
Whew. Three main messages. Okay, if you really had to boil the whole thing down, just three messages for leaders right now. There are much more inside the book, by the way. The first one is this. Stop treating change like it is out to get you. Seriously. Volatility is not your enemy. Volatility is simply the terrain you operate in. What stands in the way becomes the way. So the question is not how to survive volatility. It is how your organization moves with it. The best ones don't brace for the storm. They use it. They build on it. Anti-fragile organizations treat change like a feedback loop on fast forward. Learn, leap, and repeat. And again. And that shift from defense mode to exploration mode really does change everything. And here's the thing. If your teams keep hearing words like shield or survive or mitigate, they are gonna act like they are under siege. Change the language. And yeah, you start to change how your people show up.
Right. The second message I would add is more about structure. So if every little adjustment in your organization still needs top-level sign-off, you're not ready, not for the speed things are moving at today. Anti-fragile organizations build systems that self-adjust. They sense friction, they respond where it happens, and they improve without needing an executive meeting first. It's not about removing leadership. It's about distributing it intelligently across the whole organization. And when systems then self-correct, leadership becomes more about tuning the conditions, not directing every single node. You reduce delay, you reduce risk, and you free up your leaders to lead where it actually matters.
Yeah, and third, something that is easy to miss, but it's huge. You have got to rethink how risks and rewards are shared. If you want people to act with real initiative, they have to got to feel real ownership. And that means reworking your incentives, your governance, your collaborations, so the upside and the downside are shared appropriately. And it is not just about fairness. It's about unlocking this kind of quiet collective courage that shows up when people know this isn't just a task. This is ours.
Okay, that was very long. So here's the short version for any leader still wondering where to begin. Treat change as fuel, not fire. Second, enable your systems to self-adjust before you have to intervene. And third, let everyone shape the outcome, risk, reward, the whole deal. And if you do that, anti-fragility stops being this abstract concept. It becomes what your organization does, day in, day out.
Fascinating. Thank you very much for those tips, Jank and Jörg. They were very interesting, and the whole conversation was really interesting to me. And of course, I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the book to read more from your insights, because it's really, really helpful. But thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.